And welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, November 6th. My name is Shona Strasser. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with Dov Gartenberg about early onset mental illness, this month's Inside Passages topic. We'll meet with Troy Quinn, one of the Juno Symphony's guest conductors this season. Beth Weigel will be here giving us an update on all things going on at the libraries in town. We'll meet two artists in town for workshops in comic art and the business of being an artist. We'll hear all of the local art activities with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Voters on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota want to change the name of Shannon County to Oglala Lakota County. Residents of Shannon County overwhelmingly approved the name change Tuesday. But as Charles Michael Ray reports, this does not make the switch official.
Shannon County takes up most of the Pine Ridge Reservation. It's named after Peter Shannon, a non-native who was made Chief Justice in Dakota Territory in 1873. Shannon is noted for taking part in actions that remove Lakota from the treaty land of the Black Hills and reduce their land base to current reservations. South Dakota State Representative Kevin Keller says changing the name to Oglala Lakota County is the right move.
I think it's just good that, you know, our community has taken that step forward and really, you know, initiated this process at a local level and just making sure that our voice is going to be heard all the way up to the legislature and in the governor's office.
Keller is Oglala Lakota. He says the name change now requires approval from both the state legislature and the governor. He doesn't think this is a problem.
And I think it should be pretty pretty straightforward. And, I mean, there might be a little opposition to it, but, you know, all in all, it was a local control issue.
Keller says the name change can also be a teaching opportunity to open dialogue on South Dakota history and reconciliation. He says changing the name of Shannon County to Oglala Lakota County is similar to the move South Dakota made in 1989 when Columbus Day became Native American Day. Officials with Governor Dennis Dugard's office say he supports the process now underway to change the name. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Regionally, about 40% of voters in Southwest Alaska turned out to cast ballots Tuesday. Some communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta broke the mold, with more than half of registered voters, mostly Alaska Natives, showing up to the polls. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
The Lower Yukon Village of Russian Mission reported around three-quarters of their registered voters cast ballots in Tuesday's general election. Anastasia Larson is the city clerk for Russian Mission. She says they're excited about a possible record for their community.
We were very excited sitting in the elections in the past years. We had low turnout, but this year we saw a lot of voters coming. We had more young people show up. And we had a turnout of 138. I think it might even be the record.
Russian Mission had 75% of the 185 registered voters turnout. The village had the highest voter turnout in the region, followed by Chifornik with just under 70% and Nightmead with just about 66%. Further upriver, 66% of registered voters from Nikolai and Unvik turned out, followed by Shagalak with 56%. Gail Fanumiai is the director of the Division of Elections in Alaska. She says although some villages like Russian Mission had great turnout this year, the overall turnout for District 38, which includes communities along the lower and middle Kuskokwim River and the lower Yukon River, isn't breaking any records.
Well, right now, overall, the statewide turnout is lower than what historically happens. It happens to average about 52-55%. And we're at about 44% right now statewide. For District 38, 42.17%. And in 2010, it was 48.22%. So it's much lower than we were hoping for.
Communities in the YK Delta region attribute their high turnouts to get out the native vote, rural candidate campaigns, and interesting ballot measures like the marijuana initiative. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is honoring Veterans Monday. The annual event includes a wreath ceremony to honor fallen military members. The tribe estimates there are more than 4,000 Cherokee veterans. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Striking Eagle Invitational Basketball Tournament and Educational Fair on December 31st. Information on services and the fair at ahcnm.org. Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation provided by KSHE, a direct outlet for Zuni arts and crafts, including fetishes and jewelry. KSHE, working with the Zuni people since 1981 at 227 Don Gaspar in downtown Santa Fe. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, November 6th. My name is Shona Strasser. Joining me in the studio right now is Dove Gartenberg, the Executive Director of NAMI. And welcome to the studio.
Great to be here.
Yeah, so this you have these ongoing series of lectures and panels called Inside Passages, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what Inside Passages is first, and then we can kind of dive into it because there's one coming up.
Sure. Inside Passages are forums on mental health and wellness, and we use the description of our region is internally. So of course, because mental health deals and mental illness deals with issues of the brain and the mind. So these are a series of various types of presentations on different aspects of mental health and wellness and mental illness. Our mission, NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, is to provide education, support, and advocacy and public awareness for those living with mental illness as well as their families. So we take lots of different topics, and this month's topic will be on early onset mental illness.
And so these happen every second Tuesday of the month.
Correct.
And this one is coming up this Tuesday. For those people, you know, I have no, you know, early onset mental illness. I didn't know such a thing existed, really, that you could kind of tell beforehand or have signals and
sure.
That it was coming.
So. Well, most people know mental illness as an early adult type of issue. And schizophrenia, for instance, in most cases of bipolar, appear in late adolescence in 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. That's why they're so feared, by the way, because you have, in schizophrenia, for instance, someone who's been a normal, happy child at 18 or 19 can get quite sick with schizophrenia. So most people think of a mental illness in that way as an adult condition or happening later in life, but actually a substantial portion of mental illness is starts earlier. In fact, probably schizophrenia starts earlier. We just can't detect it. But let's take examples of early onset. Bipolar can start quite early. Depression can appear in children quite early. Anxiety disorders are very common among children, probably more so than in previous times. ADHD is very common in children. It's common in adults, too, but it's now more frequently diagnosed with children. So one statistic I can share with you is that the UW-Seek study on Juno school children said 23% of high school students report depression. So it's a serious issue, and so NAMI is really starting to focus on early intervention and early onset, because the earlier we can intervene in a case of mental illness, the better prospects for that person down the road.
And so this particular discussion on Tuesday is actually a panel. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about who are the experts on this panel.
Sure. A mix. Dr. Mark Stauffer is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the Bartlett Outpatient Clinic. He is the only full-time child and adolescent psychiatrist in the city. So he's a great resource, and he'll be talking certainly about different aspects of early onset. We have Taylor Jacobs from the Juno Youth Services. The Juno Youth Services is really the agency in town that deals and helps young people who are dealing with mental illness and substance abuse. Often they go together. And so he'll be talking about what JYS does, Student Youth Services, and also his experience as a therapist working with teenagers. And then I'm going to be on the panel, either myself, I may have to leave town on a family thing, but if I'm not there, it'll be another parent, Sandy Palki. Either one of us is a parent who is, who has raised a child that has early onset mental illness. So we are from the school of hard knocks. So that's our perspective. And we're really, the topic is what families face when a child or adolescent has early onset. So we're, in general terms, going to talk about all the issues that flow out of that.
And this is open to anyone in the public who
totally
might be interested.
Totally open to the public. Also, we have CE credits for professionals, therapists, and social workers. So you can, if you go to our website, you can sign up for CE credits. But it's really for the community and certainly for families that are experiencing this and are trying to find resources, which is often the big issue for families in early discovery. They don't know where to turn. It's an overwhelming thing. And so we want to be helpful and reduce the anxiety tied to that.
And you said that's this Tuesday. Could you tell us the time and the location?
Sure. It's at Bartlett Administrative Building, which is just off from the hospital. It has where the classrooms are. There'll be signs. It's at 5:15 to 6:45. It's an hour and a half program right after work, and there'll be refreshments, and it'll be one of the classrooms in that building.
It sounds like a very needed topic at this point in time. And it's interesting because when you say early onset, I was thinking, well, not necessarily an age, but catching it kind of early in someone. But
sure.
It's actually mostly about younger people then.
Right. And that's sort of perhaps a professional jargon for children that experience mental illness. And because of better diagnostic methods now, a lot of these illnesses can be caught earlier. So it's good education for parents or young parents who simply want to know what are the signs. And since it's a commonplace, I'm sorry to say it is commonplace, but it is commonplace, it's probably good for parents that have young children or people contemplating families to know and be educated parents to deal with it.
Speaking of education, you also have another program in place called NAMI Basics. I was wondering if you could chat about
sure.
that.
Sure. And part of this is coordinated. NAMI Basics is our new program starting in 2015. It's a six-week course for families that have children with an early onset mental illness or adolescents. And it's a fantastic course to really give them resources about treatment and diagnosis and the current research on the illnesses. So parents can be better prepared, and a lot on self-care, how to get through this challenge. Having been a parent who went through it and not having had NAMI Basics, we're trying to shortcut the suffering, reduce the suffering that's involved. There is suffering. We won't cure the suffering, but we'll reduce the suffering that's involved for families that go through this discovery process. So we encourage people to find out about it at our website, which is namijuno.org. You'll learn more details about that program. And we're doing a training as well. It's probably someone really interested in doing training. You have to be a peer who went through it, but the course is what we really want to let people know about.
And for people who don't know the NAMI, it's could you go ahead and spell out the website for us?
Yeah. It's namijuno.org, NAMIjuno.org. NAMI stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Dove, thank you so much for coming to the studio to talk to us about the Inside Passages topic with this coming Tuesday, and you said 5:15.
5:15 at Bartlett.
Great. Thank you so much.
Hope you can come. Thanks.
'Cause he gets up in the morning, then he goes to work at night, then he comes back home at 5:30, gets the same train every time. 'Cause his world is built on punctuality, it never fails, and he's all so good, and he's all so kind, and he's all. in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best things so conservatively. And his mother goes to meetings while his father pulls the main, and she stirs the tea with counselors while discussing foreign trade. And she passes looks as well as bills at every suave young man. And he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best thing so conservatively. And he likes his own backyard, and he likes his bags of men, but he's better than the rest, and his own sweat smells the best. And he hopes to grab his father's boot and make good passes on, 'cause he's all so good, and he's all so fine, and he's all so healthy in his body and his mind. He's a well-respected man about town, doing the best thing so. He adores the girl next door, 'cause he's dying to get at her, but his mother knows the best about the matter of all instincts, 'cause he's out so good, and he's out so fine, and he's out so healthy in his body and his mind.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Today is Thursday, November 6th. And joining me in the studio is Sarah Brown, the executive director of the Juno Symphony, and also Troy Quinn, the first of the Juno Symphony's guest conductors this season. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks,
Shona. Great to be here.
Yeah. So, Sarah, I was wondering, for people who don't know, the Juno Symphony has got something kind of cool going on this season, is that we're having a series of conductors, because as lots of Juno knows, that Kyle Wiley-Pickett is just kind of left the Juno Symphony this last season.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he left us. He's in the Midwest now after 14 years with the Juno Symphony. And so we had a search committee come together, and they reviewed over 70 applicants for the position for the new music director. And we've narrowed it down to three, and the three candidates will now present our first of the three concerts of our season. And we'll end with the Pops concert in June with our associate conductor. We're really excited. We've got three really great candidates, and Troy's been doing a great job so far, so we're excited to see what he does with the concert in just another, week?
Yeah. Right. It's coming up.
Yeah. So, Troy, you're the music director of the Portsmouth Institute Orchestra.
Correct.
And I was wondering if you could just kind of chat a little bit about your experience there and what brought you, why Juno?
Sure, right? That's the million-dollar question, why Juno? Well, I'm a native New Englander, actually. I grew up in New Haven and went to school in Rhode Island. So I went back there and started my own orchestra. And we've been playing for 5 and 6 seasons. This is our 6th season now. And it's a full symphony orchestra made up of great players from Boston and Rhode Island. And we have a season. And, I thought I came to Los Angeles for my doctorate, and I saw that the application was open for Juno music director. And I said, this looks interesting. I'm very, very intrigued by the community and by the thriving arts culture that goes on here. So I thought that would be a nice supplement to my bi-coastal events. So I applied, and like Sarah said, went through the process, and I'm thrilled to be here. Everybody's just been very warm and welcoming, and I work with the musicians on Tuesday. We have another rehearsal today, and so I'm just very thrilled, looking forward to making music with the community.
I wonder, is the experience, so you started your own symphony.
Right.
That's incredible.
It's quite an undertaking, because it has, no longer is it enough to just have the musical chops. I think that's first and foremost. But
nowadays, you know, music directors and conductors need to have a business sense of things, the need to do the financial fundraising part of it, and also, you know, I was just telling Sarah, it's like running for mayor. You know, it's such a public figure nowadays in the community. It's the leader, usually, of the music community. So that gave me a great, great experience at a young age, doing all that on my own, and then kind of trailblazing throughout my young career so far. That's brought me here. So it's been rewarding.
So what are you? What will you be working on this? What's in the show?
The show is a very exciting array of pieces, both film music and classical, actually. And none of the three pieces have ever been performed by the Juno Symphony. I wanted to do something different. And so when I was thinking about the programming, I said, let's do something we've never done before. So to my knowledge, they've never even been performed in Juno. So most of the community will be hearing it for the first time live, which is really exciting. The first piece we're doing is a film suite from the 1944 film Henry V. It's a Shakespearean film, but if you like Lord of the Rings-esque music, it's like that, just a precursor, really, about 60 years before Lord of the Rings, by William Walton. And it's rarely heard. It's just got a lot of different aspects to it and a lot of percussion. It's just thrilling music. And then we've got the trumpet concerto. We're bringing in Joe Foley, who's a colleague of mine, principal trumpet of the Royal Philharmonic. And he's fantastic, just a world-class artist. And we'll be doing the Haydn trumpet concerto. And then our closer is the Mendelssohn Italian Symphony, which is really an audience favorite, an absolutely thrilling piece if you've never heard classical music. So it's really diverse. This program's for everybody, people who've never heard classical music before.
Yeah, it sounds like a great mix. How do you choose your, you know, kind of seasons or your concerts in general? What motivates you and what gets you excited?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I can answer that personally, Shona. I need to really be in love with that program because I'm living with it for so many months.
A long time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even though the concert is just two days, you know, I've been studying this for months and years. So I have to really, I think, enjoy the pieces. But more than that, I'm looking to challenge the musicians and also for something accessible to our audiences and something diverse. You know, my own background is pretty diverse as a musician, so I kind of go into a program thinking what we could bring for everybody and usually end with a bang, as they say.
You got to start with a bang and end with
right.
a bang, right? Yeah, exactly.
So that's my plan.
So for, you know, because I'm work in the arts myself, and I'm just wondering, because, you know, seeing you, the radio audience can't see this, but you're a pretty young guy. And
I am.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Youth's on my side.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sometimes I think that when people think of conductors and that kind of thing, that they need to be maybe a little older and crustier, and I say that in a loving way.
Right.
But I just wonder, like, what do you feel that it kind of works in your favor, and you know, because it's a stigma, maybe a thing.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely valid. You know, the age-old persona that a conductor is an 80-year-old white-haired person. But I think it works to my advantage. I mean, youth and experience are rare, and you know, music can be a young person's game these days. And so, for me, I think, if I'm prepared and I know the music and I can impassion our musicians, I can gain the respect right away, and it doesn't matter if I'm 20, you know. I think that's also a good draw for audience members, you know, because I got into classical music myself late. And, you know, if we can bring in more younger people, my generation, to the symphony, I think being a young person myself, that's a benefit to bringing in that kind of dynamic and that age group.
Yeah, totally. What about the Juno Symphony? How was that rehearsal? What's the feel of the symphony for you right now?
You know, I actually feel very comfortable with the symphony. You know, we had a great rehearsal. It's still rough. There's still things to work on, but the musicians are so wonderful and willing to get it absolutely right. And I'm a pretty, even though I may look young and friendly, I'm a pretty tough taskmaster. So we're whipping everybody into shape to be up to snuff, and you know, they're taking on the challenges. A lot of these pieces are played at a very quick tempo. You know, some people have never played them before, so they're challenging, even though they may seem not so dissonant. They're very challenging to play, and everybody's welcomed the kind of fast-paced, go-get-it environment, which is how I like to work. Get the job done, you know.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you're there for a reason. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. So when you leave Juno, what do you go back to work on?
Well, actually, for a little bit, my calendar is free, luckily. But most of the work I do in Los Angeles is studio work and working in the television recording industry. So I just got off a couple of recordings with Glee, and so I'll be going back and doing some more studio stuff like that, freelance. And then I have a couple concerts back in Rhode Island next spring, doing some Civil War music and some interesting programming there as well. So, but mostly I'm going to take a little bit of time to relax and enjoy what's left of the Los Angeles sun.
Yeah, nice. I like it. Sarah, did you want to mention anything else about the concert? We could get dates and times and ticket information would be great.
Absolutely. The concerts are November 15th and 16th at JDHS. Saturday shows at 8 p.m., Sunday shows at 3 p.m. There is a concert conversation with Troy 1 hour before each of the performances. You can buy tickets at Hearthside Books, The Jack. You can get them at the door or at our website at junosymphony.org. As always, we offer pay-as-you-can seating, so get them while they're hot. And tomorrow at the Baranoff Hotel in the Bubble Room, you'll have a chance to meet Troy, shake his hand, say hello, from 4:30 to 7 o'clock in the Baranoff Bubble Room.
That's right. It's part of First Friday.
Yeah.
Right.
Great.
I'm
make
out.
It part of your gallery
time.
Walk.
Troy, I didn't even ask, what's your instrument?
Well,
actually, all of them.
Yeah, well, I have a very odd combination of being an orchestral conductor and a professional singer. So voice is my main instrument. I do play piano as well. So I came at it kind of a different avenue than most conductors.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so
pleasure.
Much for coming to our
Thank
community.
Thank you so much.
And have a great concert.
Looking forward to it.
And here is Writer's Almanac for Thursday, November 6th.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 6th of November, 2014. It was on this day, 1860, Abraham Lincoln was elected to his first term President of the United States. He'd served a single term in Congress. He'd run twice for the U.S. Senate, unsuccessfully, had only 1 year of formal schooling. Newspapers, some of them called him a third-rate Western lawyer. Once he got the Republican nomination for president, Lincoln lay low until the election. His strategy was to let the opposition tear itself apart. His opposition was Stephen A. Douglas, the Democratic candidate, and the Southern Democrats had broken off and nominated their own John C. Breckinridge. And Lincoln won against them with only 40% of the popular vote. He won in the Electoral College, even though he didn't get a single electoral vote from a Southern state. And before he even took the oath of office, South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas had all seceded from the Union. As Lincoln was getting ready to leave Springfield, Illinois for Washington, he told a group of journalists, "Boys, your troubles are over now. Mine have just begun." It's the birthday of the novelist Michael Cunningham, 1952, Cincinnati, raised in Pasadena, best known for his novel The Hours, a bestseller in 1999. His most recent novel, The Snow Queen, came out earlier this year. Michael Cunningham, who was deeply influenced at the age of 15, reading Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway. He said, "I'd never seen sentences of such complexity, musicality, density, and beauty. Mrs. Dalloway made me into a reader, and it was only a matter of time until I became a writer." It's the birthday of the poet Ann Porter, born in Sherborne, Massachusetts, in 1911, who, at the age of 83, published her first collection of poems, an altogether different language. It was a finalist for the National Book Award that year. And it's the birthday of John Philip Sousa, born in Washington, D.C., 1854, published his first composition at the age of 18, conducted a Broadway orchestra by the time he was 21. He was the leader of the U.S. Marine Band for 12 years, retired and formed his own concert band, went on a world tour. He was a perfectionist, John Philip Sousa. and a prolific composer, suites, humoresques, dances, university fight songs, operettas, and on Christmas Day, 1896, he composed The Stars and Stripes Forever, also wrote a full-length autobiography and three novels. Here's a poem for today by Liesl Mueller, In November. Outside the house, the wind is howling and the trees are creaking horribly. This is an old story with its old beginning as I lay me down to sleep. But when I wake up, sunlight has taken over the room. You have already made the coffee, and the radio brings us music from a confident age. In the paper, bad news is set in distant places. Whatever was bound to happen in my story did not happen. But I know there are rules that cannot be broken. Perhaps a name was changed, a small mistake. Perhaps a woman I do not know is facing the day with the heavy heart that by all rights should have been mine. In November, a poem by Liesl Mueller from her collection Alive Together, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, November 6th. My name is Shona Strasser. And in the studio with me, we have Beth Weigel and Andy from the Juno Public Libraries. Welcome.
Thank you.
I love when y'all come here.
We love to come here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that works out really well then. Phew. Yeah. So you all have so much going on at the library all the time. So that's why I'm super excited that you come on the radio to talk about it, because not everybody really knows. So, they should.
They will.
Good.
That's right.
So what's going on?
Well, the big thing we got going on tomorrow, we've been given this amazing donation from the LEGO Corporation and the American Library Association. So we've got like, I don't know, a bazillion Legos. And so we're going to have another Science Friday at the library at the Valley tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And we're inviting all kids of all ages to come and like break in those Legos. Show us what you can build. We don't know what to do with like a bazillion Legos.
Wow. How exciting.
I know.
What a wonderful opportunity.
So I know there's lots of Lego League and all kinds of organizations that and kids that play with Legos, but we need to be schooled on the Legos. So come on by the Valley Library tomorrow, 1 o'clock. We'll be building cool stuff.
How fun.
Yeah. And you know, we've got a lot of other things going on this month as well. And we're going to go a little bit out of order. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening now later in the month. And then we'll come back to some other stuff. But we got International Games Day, and Andy, she's my game expert. Tell them about what kind of games that they can play.
We are going to have hundreds of games at the library. So there's going to be board games like Settlers of Catan. There's going to be card games, dice games, anything you can think of. Everybody is welcome to attend. It's going to be from 11 a.m. to about 5 p.m. on Saturday at the Valley Library. Come anytime in that period, and people will be starting and finishing and playing different games.
Right. That's Saturday on the 15th of the month, so in another week or so here. And we also have our ongoing Third Thursday, and this month we've got a guest coming. She's coming from the East Coast. Her name's Joan Cushing, and she's going to not only be at our Third Thursday and talk about the Northern Lights Junior Theater is putting on this play called A Christmas Doll, and she adapted the book that is called A Christmas Doll. And it's a story, you know, kind of a Dickinsonian sort of rags to riches, sort of, not even riches, just rags to like living above the poverty line story.
So rags to where I'm at. Yeah, got it. Exactly. I know that story.
Set in that same sort of era about two little girls who are in an orphanage, and they, you know, go out and they have to deal with living on the street. And then the one girl, she gets a job as the hearts girl in a doll shop. So she sews on all the hearts on the dolls that are being made for Christmas. It's very heartwarming. And they're putting this on as a play, and we are doing a little sort of stage, page to stage, you know, programming around that. So it's going to be fun. Joan's going to come to our third Thursday family night and talk about what it's like to try and adapt, you know, stories. And there's some other great stories that she's adapted. People might be familiar with The Diary of a Worm and Fly and Spider and Brave Irene, some books like that, some really popular children's books. So she's taken a lot of those kinds of books and adapted them into musicals. And she's won lots of awards, so she's going to be really fascinating to hear talk about that process. And we'll have a little craft and light supper at Third Thursday. And then we're going to expand that out and do a workshop on that Saturday, the 22nd of the month at the Douglas Library. And we're going to invite kids and teenagers from 9 and up to come, and we're just going to have some books out, and we're going to just see what we can do and throw together in 3 hours between brainstorming how to, you know, develop a scene or a song or put together some props and costumes and, you know, just put on a little show at the end and see what scenes we can develop in those 3 hours with her as our guide through that process. So we're literally going to take something from the page and we're going to put it on the stage in Douglas.
Cool.
So it should be really fun. So we have a limited space for that, only about 15 kids. It's free, of course. So if you do want to be part of that, it's good to call ahead. And my phone number is the number to call, 586-0434, or just the general library number and ask for Beth, and we'll get you advance registered. So, and then beyond that, we've got a few days that were closed this month. Of course, Veterans Day, which is next Tuesday, and then we'll also be closed on Thanksgiving Day and the day after Thanksgiving. So a few closures. And I also wanted to mention that we are still in the process of selling, or the Friends of the Library is selling bricks for the new library. So you can, you know, get an engraved brick, and they're only available through the end of the year. Sounds like they'll be at the Jack tomorrow during First Friday and next month as well, First Friday, and maybe even at the public market. So otherwise, go online to Friends JPL, and you can find more information there.
And it's a great way to actually kind of make your mark, so to speak.
Yeah, so when you come into the new library, there'll be a couple brick walls there that are for show more than for structural reasons, and that's where all the engraved bricks will be.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
So Andy's got amazing programming lined up this weekend.
We do. We have two guests who have come in along with the Jack and Alaska Robotics. We have Katie Lane and Dylan McConus. They are here.
That's right.
And
they are
here.
In fact, why don't you set it up for us, and then we'll ask them to come into the studio after a short break. Yeah.
Sounds great. You can meet both of them on Friday night at the library, 7 p.m. Katie is an attorney and negotiation coach, and she works with artists and freelancers to help them protect their rights and get paid fairly for their work. And she'll be doing a workshop on Saturday, November 8th at the Douglas Library, 10 a.m. That is before the library is open. So doors will open at 9:45. Her workshop is going to be on how to be a negotiation ninja, so business advice for artists and creatives. And then Dylan McConus is a comic artist, a beautiful work, and all of her work is exhibited at the Alaska Robotics Gallery this month for First Friday. And she will be teaching a two-hour drawing workshop at 1:30 at the Douglas Library, also on Saturday the 8th.
Sounds like a blast, too.
Yeah, yes. So it's going to be really two days of them being in our community, and we have a really great opportunity to learn a little bit more, not only about drawing and comics, but also if you want to get into publishing a book or becoming an artist, like there's a lot of red tape, I imagine, that you have to negotiate. So really great advice, and they can tell you more about
that. That's right. We'll talk with them in detail in just mere moments. So for people who need to get that schedule because they can't remember it or because they just need it in paper form or online, where can they go?
Our website, of course, is www.juno.org/library. And we have a printed calendar there, and our featured events are there. You can also find us on Facebook. We post things on our Facebook page as well.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Beth and Andy, for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as part of KTOO's series on Alaska Native artists, we're going to begin the first one today. And this is a really cool. It's a just a quick kind of overview of this artist, Andrew Abeo. Abeo.
You are listening to the Alaska Native Artist Spotlight.
My name is Andrew Abeo, and I am a Sukpiak artist. I specialize in Alaska Native art. One of my specialties is to build full-size traditional Sukpiak kayaks. I didn't grow up carving anything, really. I took my first class here at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, discovered that it was natural inside me, and I didn't even know that. My first class was for an atlatl, and my second class was bentwood hunting visor. That was taught by my uncle, Peter Lind. Grew from there, and I started learning about my culture. My inspiration, I would say, would actually be I didn't know my culture and the history of my people. My two daughters at the time, I couldn't blame anybody else if they didn't know their culture. They are the reason why I started, is for them to know their culture and heritage. For me, one of the main goals is actually the construction of the kayaks, is to bring them back. I just think of myself as a stepping stone to have our kayaks and the native cultures be more prevalent with being used. And at one time, our people were masters of the sea. I would like to help bring them back.
The Alaska Native Artist Spotlight Series is produced by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. See the art and artists online at knba.org.
Funding for the series has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts Artworks, Rasmussen Foundation, the Atwood Foundation, ASRC Energy, Wells Fargo, Koniag Incorporated, ConocoPhillips Alaska, and by Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, November 6th. My name is Shona Strausser. And in the studio with me, I have Pat Race of Alaska Robotics. We have artist Dylan McConis, and also, Katie, are you a lawyer?
I am a lawyer.
Sweet. A lawyer and arts lawyer, because actually that's the best kind of lawyer
to be. Kind of lawyer to be, as far as I'm concerned.
Welcome all to the studio.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So y'all are in town, actually, to do some very cool things this weekend. So I was hoping that maybe, Pat, you could give us an introduction of, you know, why you brought these two folks to town, and then we can talk about kind of specifics of the weekend.
Yeah, actually, it came out of JAHC Artist Roundtable. They're talking about how it's important for artists to have more of a perspective on business. And so I thought Katie would be perfect to come and talk to people about negotiations and contracts and things that are important to artists that they don't always think about.
Yeah. So, Katie, how did you get involved in this particular field?
I used to do theater when I was younger, and it didn't quite work out the way that I was hoping. There was no fame and fortune in my rainbow, but there was law school. And so I decided to use what I learned in law school to actually work with people who were creating things that they cared about. Because what I noticed when I was involved in theater and when I was creating art was that being able to get information that was actually helpful, that made sense to the business that you were creating, because a creative business is a little bit different. You're considering different things. There are different values that you have to take into account, that they weren't always getting really good advice. So I thought, well, I understand this community. I love this community. Maybe I am in a particularly good place to give advice. And so that's what I do. I write negotiation advice weekly on my blog. That's how I started, and moved into doing sort of a part-time practice because I didn't know if it was going to work out. And now this is what I do full-time.
And does a lot of the legal work have to do with rights and things like that, or?
A lot of it ends up being about intellectual property rights and contracts. So how are you going to work with other people? How are they going to pay you? How much are they going to pay you? When is that going to happen? How do you deal with conflicts effectively? A lot. There's a unfortunately popular narrative that artists don't have a lot of power when it comes to negotiating with others, or that they don't understand business, which I think is just fundamentally untrue. Artists understand narrative better than most anybody else, and business is a narrative. It is a narrative about a relationship between two people, so they're actually particularly well-suited. And part of what I do is try to help them take on my perspective that they're powerful and well-suited for what they're doing.
Do you find often that sometimes artists will not necessarily value themselves as high as maybe they could or should?
Absolutely, but I think we all do that. Right? It's one of those things that's natural. Is when you really want something, you can think of all the reasons why somebody else might not want to give it to you. So part of it is just learning why you are powerful.
Yeah. Well, it's a great. It's actually much needed in our community. So it's very cool that you're here. When are your workshops?
My workshop is going to be Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. I get to open the library, which it makes me very excited. And it's going to be from 10 to noon. I'm going to teach people how to take control within a negotiation, how to feel powerful, how to ask questions, and how to get what they want.
And how to have fun while they're doing
it. Exactly.
It's going to be fun. It's a fun workshop. Katie is fun.
And the cool thing is that this is free.
Yeah.
I mean,
Friends of the Library and Alaska Robotics, we sponsor this, and it's totally free to anyone that can come down and cram into the room.
Yeah, and have you been to Juno before, Kitty?
I have not, and this is so much fun. I'm having a blast.
Oh, cool. Well, there's a lot. I mean, artists per capita, there's a really high number. So it's a much-needed commodity for sure. So thank you for coming.
Yeah,
for sure.
And Dylan is here, too. Dylan's a very talented comic artist. I've been a fan of hers for a long time and seen her work exhibited at different conventions. And she's doing a show over at our gallery for First Friday. And then both Dylan and Katie are doing kind of an introductory lecture tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the downtown library. So if you're not sure if you want to come to one of the workshops or not, if that's like a little bit too much of a commitment, the lecture is a great way to come and meet them and maybe ask a question or two.
Find out how attractive we really are.
Yeah.
as my mom would say, a face for radio.
Yeah. Face is made for radio. Come on down, everyone.
So Dylan, so you're doing a drawing workshop, and I really love the title of this because I'm a theater geek myself, but character design from the inside out.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for you, and what do you think people could really take from this?
A lot of people really just think of comic books as a totally visual medium, and they forget how much of it is about storytelling, just sort of communicated partially through pictures. So there's a lot of writing behind every comic, and there's a lot of thinking about how to embody somebody else. I have a background in theater, too, so for me, one of the great things about doing graphic novels is that I get to play all of the parts, like the parts that I, a tiny little brown-haired girl, would not get in real life. I can be, you know, a threatening patriarch or, you know, a dragon or whatever. I get to think, what is behind this person? What's motivating them? How do I express that in their body language? I get to do all the costuming. I get to do all the set design. So for me, it's about getting to do both somebody's image and somebody's interior. And so I'm going to be talking a lot about how to build characters who are people first and then who are pictures second. It's going to be so much fun. I've come up with a lot of really weird exercises to sort of give people a jump start to thinking around corners when it comes to developing a character. So if you're a writer and you want to try out drawing, you should come. There's no skill level requirement. Trust me. People always tell me they can't.
I will be there.
Yeah.
I will be drawing.
Katie is one of those people who, quote, doesn't draw. I don't think there's any such thing. So as long as you have hands to draw with, you are welcome at this workshop. But I'll be giving you both writing and drawing exercises to help you think of new ways to create characters who feel like real people.
Cool. And Dylan, where are you based?
We've actually both come from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
That's great. And do you all have websites that people could check out their work, just, you know, if they're like, I definitely want to scope it out before I go and kind of know what I'm getting into?
You should definitely start out with the Alaska Robotics website, because they have a little rundown on both of us.
Yeah, we've got information on when the workshops are and links to their information as well. But go ahead and, yeah, tell them your...
Oh, my website is dylanmaconis.com. There's only one of me, so even if you just Google my name, that's what will come up.
Cool.
And people can check out my blog at workmadeforhire.net.
Awesome. And so First Friday, you're in full effect there, Dylan. And so
yeah,
Alaska Robotics
down
will be
and
open.
Have some cheese and crackers and check out some of Dylan's work. She's going to have some of her originals, which is rare for a digital artist to share. So that'll be fun. And you get to see some of the process, too, that leads up to it. And we've got several of her books as well.
Yeah, if you want to know how the sausage is made, I've brought a lot of messy sketches all the way up through to the finished art. So if you've ever been interested in how a comic book gets made or how you come up with what a character looks like, a cartoon character, you should come check it out.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you all have a busy weekend. Pretty exciting stuff going on, too. You can check that out on Alaska Robotics' website, or you could even check it out on the library's website, too, and they'll have all the events on both places.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
how
thanks,
cool.
Josh.
Yeah.
The KTOO and Taku Smokery Seafood Fest, November 15th at the Jack. Expertly prepared salmon and halibut to feast on, plus beer and wine. What more could you ask for? Tutored beer tasting from 4 to 5 p.m. and all-you-can-eat feast from 5 to 8 p.m. Tickets at ktoo.org. Support for a Juno Afternoon comes from BEP Company, providing remanufacturing and recycling services for toner and inkjet print cartridges. Serving Juno for 25 years. More information at bepcompany.com or 789-2230.
Thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strauser. In the studio with me here on this fine Thursday, November 6th, the one, the only, Ms. Nancy DiCerni.
Hey, Shona.
Hey.
How you doing?
Oh, you know, doing really well.
Hey, what's going on these days?
I don't know.
In your life?
Working on a little show.
Yeah,
working
really?
On a little show opening tomorrow night. Oofta.
Oofta.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Well, it's also First Friday, so we'll
Isn't
cover
that. Exciting?
There are so many things happening on First Friday that it is exciting, and I hope everybody's taking their vitamins. So here we go. Come over to the Jack and get your little flyer thing, which Megan has already put together. They're not quite ready for, but she'll have them up on the web. We have Gordon Harrison, who's a calligrapher, and Sarah Istill, who's written the poems. He's calligged them, and she's written them. And
that's a technical term.
Yes, yeah. And it's a beautiful show. As well, there will be friends of the library in the lobby selling bricks for the Mendenhall Library. So a nice place to get started there. Gordon will be offering a calligraphy workshop later in the month, and Sarah will be having a poetry reading. So stay tuned for that
cool.
too. K2 here has a snow show.
Snow show.
That's what it says here. They're going to have artwork related to snow.
Cool.
Maybe we're all making snowflakes or something. I don't know.
That'll be
and
fun.
Over at TK McGuire's, starting at 6, they're having a whiskey tasting. So you can come on over there. It's $15. You get some whiskey and some grub, it says. Over at Copa, there's several things happening over in the Copa area of town.
I like that. Copa's kind of brought all this new energy to that area. It's very cool.
They're having a 12x12 quilt show. There are 8 groups of quilts, each containing 12 mini 12-inch square quilts. Each group features a theme in response to a color play challenge. They're from the Alaska Fiber Festival artists. Next door to that, in what's called the 917 space, I guess, is Sticks and Stones by Dean Guanelli and Playing with Oil by Christine Crooks, another husband and wife team doing things together. Coho's Bar and Grill has a wine tasting and art by Frank Mooney. They'll have some wine tasting, some wine flights, charcuterie and cheese. You know, this is a nice little break there after
great.
The ice cream over at Copa. And then the Alaska State Library outside my window, some more quilts from the Capital Quilt group. They will be featuring that, and they're only open from 4 till 6. So if you're interested, you should get there first, maybe. Foodland. Hey, they're in the game.
They are?
Yeah. They're having a holiday open house over from 3 till 7. So stop in. They're having all sorts of new things and want to, you know, open themselves up to the neighborhood. So stop in. On the Franklin Street front, we have at the Juno Artist Gallery, Toby Harbinick. His landscape photography will be there. He has a new printing process. I don't think it's new, on aluminum, which produces especially vivid photos. And there will be treats. You'll notice that you're not going to go hungry on first.
That's right.
Rainforest Yoga has their hour of yoga with Bev Ingram from 5:15 to 6:15. They're above Gold Town. There's Kindred Post Photo Booth is having mealtime antics. Maybe this is bring your friends and family. Post. There's a photo booth, and you can set your table up and then have photos taken with, it's Ariel and somebody else. Ariel Rolf is doing this, and there will be live music by Cat and Kite, I think, and there will be light refreshments.
All over town.
Okay, but here's some heavier refreshments. The Red Dog Saloon has Underland Wonderland photography of the underground mines and ruins and relics by Brian, and I'm forgetting his name. But anyway, they will be also having prime ribs. So when you get all done, you're ready to sit down and have dinner, go to the Red Dog Saloon and have dinner. The Bear's Lair has Copper Crafts by Dave Stout. That is in the Senate building. The Baranoff Bubble Room. This is exciting times in the symphony world because one of the new conductor candidates is here, Troy Quinn, and you can meet him on Friday evening from 4:30 to 7 at the Bubble Room and get to enjoy music and chat with him a little bit before you go to the symphony and hear him. Vanity has Jason Lucas. Annie Kales has Barbara Lavallee and Alice Tierstig. Alaska Robotics, you just were hearing about the cartoons and comic artist and all the workshops she's doing. Hearthside Books has a book signing with Kathy Connor. It's the second edition of her Roadside Geology of Alaska, so come get Kathy to sign that. Doesn't mention anything about, oh, yes, there may be refreshments there too. GCI has photography by Michael Phelps and refreshments. The Rookery Cafe has photography by Mary Vanderjack. The exhibit is called Layers. She does wedding photography, so maybe it's like wedding cakes. I don't know. I'll have to go see. Elise Tomlinson is opening a new studio. She's upstairs in the Valentine Building, which is the building that is right. Go in right next to Lisa Davidson and go upstairs to Suite 5. And Elise has some of her new pieces of work that she's been doing. The Silver Bow has recent works by McGill Pratt. And let's see, a very exciting new thing. Two things happening over at the Articore building. Mountainside Wellness will have some free winter conditioning classes. But the exciting news is Gigi Monroe's Designs, the new studio, is opening. This is going to be exciting, I think. It's on Suite 326. Stop by the brand new studio featuring custom-designed wigs and costumes for everyone's inner diva.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. They're fabulous.
Yeah,
they're totally
fabulous.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, and at the Canvas, it's Unmap by Brandon Howard. It's a ceramic work. And let's see, we got at the City Museum 3 exhibits opening. Not just one, but 3 exhibits opening. Marianne Manning.
Cool.
Toe. also known as DS, Tony Newman. Downtown Sights, which is a collection of their paintings from their collection that have the colors and shapes of Juno's architecture. And in the valley at the skateboard park, you can see the work by Spencer Keaton Cunningham. He's doing mural work out there. So, boy, is there enough to do on Friday night or what? And then I think there's some stuff later in the evening, like Journey Unauthorized happens at 8.
So it's a Journey cover band.
Yeah, yeah.
If I wasn't opening a show tomorrow, I would still be there. I can't help it.
Okay.
You know, Nancy, we only have like 20 seconds
you
left.
You told me we'd have plenty of time,
Shona. I thought
Shona.
We would, but I didn't know First
okay,
Friday
so quickly,
was so hardcore.
It's The Winter's Tale. It is Chicago. It is, there's just all kinds of things happening, and you'll have to go to the website, www.jahc.org, and come by and get your little flyer, because there's so much going on the rest of the week.
That's right. And you can also check out stuff at ktoo.org. That day, that information on the calendar is on there as well. It is also, you can check out, there's this very cool mobile app with this paper calendar, you know, of First Friday stuff that Nancy has in her hand. It's also online at ktoo.org, and it's mobile friendly. It's totally cool. You can click on
If you have a smartphone.
If you have a smartphone.
You
if your phone is
that.
Dumb like mine, then you're out of luck.
Yes, yes. And so the whirling dervish that you see will be all of us
yes.
for the rest of the week.
Exactly. The one only Ms. Nancy DeCherney, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. A federal appeals court in Cincinnati has upheld laws banning same-sex marriage in four states, Ohio,